The definition of the pure devotee, Maharaj?
Definition of a pure devotee.
That is the first thing. Towards the direction, whatever is the purity, pride sneaks in whichever form it is.
Pride?
Yeah.
Okay.
While getting on to the purity and how to address that.
That's a two-part question.
Two-part question.
Okay. There's broad and there's narrow and there's in between definitions. Just like even who is a devotee? The question asked of Lord Chaitanya by Satyaraj Khan and his followers of the followers of Kalinagram. Who is a devotee? So there's the very broad and intermediate and the topmost. So the broad is anyone who chants Krishna's name even once. Ajamila was chanting Narayana's name. And then the intermediate, the clearing stage, and then the topmost stage. Topmost stage is just by seeing such a person, love of God bursts open from one's heart, and one thinks of Krishna in ecstatic love. That's a devotee. As there are different definitions of grades of devotees, they're all devotees. So there's, here's Rupa Goswami's definition of Uttama Bhakti. One who's performing sadhana, following Rupa Goswami, is in Uttama Bhakta. So that's the very broad. And then there's gradations or stages within that. So one who is on the path of Rupa Goswami, sincerely following, that's one definition, and then another, and then another. And we may find within Scripture this statement and that statement, and well, wait a minute, this says this and that says that, so it seems like there's a contradiction. It's not, it's just different stages or different perspectives on a stage of devotion. So we know what the topmost is, but the other doesn't mean that, you know, the beginning stage of that is not, provided one continues, that one can discontinue or slacken and then become not a strict follower of Rupa Goswami or sincerely on the path of Uttam Bhakti. So we can look at the external, we can look at the internal, and we can also look at intent. Even from the beginning stage. The beginning stage, or the earliest stages of sadhana, can be, I recognize my contaminated condition without all the detail, and I recognize what the goal is, and I recognize Rupa Goswami is, and those who are exhibiting and following his teachings can take me to that stage. I don't have envy or jealousy or disregard for the stage, although I know I'm not there, but I wish to attain it. I wish to strive for that. So that's the intention. Sankalpa. I spoke about this at the Houston Japa retreat, the whole like 2-hour thing, along with, come on in, along with discussion. The intention is very important. Even I may be down here, you know, it's intention. So that's the explanation. Now, pride. What is it? First, you know, to address a disease, you need to know what the disease is before you even know what the cure is. Of course, you can take the cure, and it might be such an effective medicine that cures the disease anyways. So the medicine is chanting the holy name without offense. And Krishna Prasadam, that's our medicine. But the disease is rooted in false ego. The false ego is a misconception of who I am. So the misconception of I comes the misconception of mine. They go together, I and mine. And pride is to hold in one's heart some sense of self-importance because of what falls in the category of mine. It's rooted in misconception of who I am. Because actually, everything belongs to Krishna, it's not mine. But the material conception is, certain things are mine. And I have pride in mine, whatever that is. It's rooted in the bodily conception, or the sense of false ego, and wishing, with false ego, wishing to put oneself forward, thereby eclipsing Krishna, and my own identity, my own real identity. So that's the disease. And the antidote for the disease is placing Krishna at the center. Whatever I think of as mine is actually Krishna's. And who am I? I am a tiny, fragmental part of Krishna, as everything else that I think is mine is also from Krishna and of Krishna, Krishna's. So the spiritual conception, this is knowledge, the spiritual conception defeats the material conception. So we may theoretically agree to the spiritual conception, which is an important beginning, in fact, a necessary beginning, but not sufficient to get rid of pride. I still hold on to mine, and I still hold on to I and mine. So that's like, I can theoretically, this is the incomplete eradication is through knowledge. But knowledge is, according to Nectar Devotion, it's important to get a foothold in bhakti. I have to have a basic understanding of what's what. Sambandhagyan. Everything in relation to Krishna. Myself and matter and spirit in relation to Krishna. And then try to act accordingly. That's the cultivation part. To the degree that I can act with a spiritual conception fortified by the strength that comes from proper chanting, spiritual strength that comes from proper chanting, proportionate to that, the pride is dismissed as the material conception of who I am and what's around me is also dismissed. I can still do all of my activities, but in spiritual consciousness instead of material consciousness, or Krishna consciousness instead of Maya. And pride is just part of Maya. So impetus has partly is, you know, I don't like to suffer, and trying to be the enjoyer of that which isn't mine through the agency of pride is miserable, and I don't like to be miserable. I like it's opposite. I want real happiness, but that's part, you know, that's certainly an impetus. I don't like darkness, I want light. I don't want misery, I want real happiness, not the illusory happiness. I want real happiness. That's this jigyasu, inquisitiveness into reality, and not, you know, not a mirror reflection of reality, but reality. So satyam, like yesterday, satyam, satyam, param, satyam, trinikritya, jagat sarvam. You know that one, right? I'm looking at Mahamantra, because he was asking that question yesterday. The next line, trinikritya jagat sarvam. Satyam, satyam, param, satyam, hari, anything alone. So, that's, you know, knowing what we don't want and knowing what we want. You know, the means as well as the goal, taking shelter of the holy name. That's the medicine for the disease of pride. Because we can't chant effectively holding on to pride. We don't want to keep chanting. Or even when we're chanting, we're not wanting to chant. We don't want to keep chanting.
To this point, Maharaj, the one which I took from Yatra also, where we are, the three different sections. One is, I see it as three different roles which I play, which is sadhana, what we do, which makes sadhana work. I work, and then at home,
family.
The responsibilities.
Naturally.
So, from your statement which was made in Yatra, like we do like a two-pocket thing, me, you,
Krishna,
me, right. That was a very good statement which I registered. But how much of percentage, as you said just now, the real happy, towards real happiness, or towards the pure purity where we want to be. In sadhana bucket, it is how much we do. It's all related to...
It's not only how much, it's the quality.
How we do in work and with our responsibilities. It really proportionates...
Yes.
...into sadhana.
Yes. So, in other words, as with sadhana, so also with family and occupation. It starts at home. And, you know, at home starts where the heart is. So it's your relationship with Krishna, that's where it starts. And then it goes out. So as much as you do that nicely, then the home and the career can be done differently than the home and career is done without Krishna. The competitive doership, etc., 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 etc. Maya, I'm at the center, it's all about me, you know, way of conducting life in the workplace, in the home. But it starts with sadhana. The spiritual well-being has as its shadow the material well-being. So proportionate to how I invest and conduct my sadhana, proportionately, the other major parts of my life become spiritualized also. All right? Upananda.
You said it. Proper chanting is the medicine for pride. Can we safely say that proper chanting is the medicine? All obvious?
I missed the question. You're making a statement or you're raising a question?
Question.
What's your question?
Can we safely say that proper chanting is the medicine for all?
Sure. It's the spiritual ocean. Yes. One of the challenges that Bhaktivedanta Swami would make to persons is present something that's a problem that doesn't have a spiritual solution to it. I challenge you. And then he would present a problem and he would explain the solution to the problem is a spiritual solution, following which there's a material solution, without which there's not a material solution. That was his, you know, implied institute for higher consciousness or something like that, whatever you call it, IFAS. Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology, that was it. And that was like, you know, the motto. It's just, it's from spiritual well-being, material well-being follows. It's another way of saying the same thing. But then, okay, challenge me. You know, to non-devotee audience. He would offer like that and then explain. Okay? So the answer to your question, just another, it's a longer answer to say yes. Okay. Shankadhar, yes. Just wait.
Sorry.
Yes, Shankadhar.
I have a question, a medical question, maybe two or three about...
A medical question?
Multiple questions.
Multiple questions, okay.
So, you're preaching. So, we see that in Iskcon, there is so much time and energy spent in preaching colleges and all that. A lot of people preaching in colleges.
Well, there's not enough. I don't think there's enough.
It's not enough, but I don't know, at least the efforts towards preaching to the villages or the uneducated people. We hear in some places where Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to preach to the, you know, villages through songs.
Prabhupada wanted everything. You know, the emphasis has to do with the person. Prabhupada was encouraging. He encouraged Lokanath Maharaj, who likes preaching in villages. This is very nice. Make 100 of these. To the scientist, oh, this is very nice. Make many of these. To the artists, oh, this is very nice. Make more artists. To the book distributors, oh, very nice. Make more book distribution. Prasadam distributor, oh, very nice. More prasadam distribution. Schools, oh, very nice. Oh, agricultural community, very nice. According to the, you know, and would say to that person in terms that this is the most important, this is the best. And so, you know, encouragement, not like it was hyperbole. But they're all the best, not exaggeration.
So is there a strategy for in ISKCON that is particularly suited for village preaching
or people who are not really? Two. Or three. The Padyatra is one. It's still going on. Not only in India, they have international Padyatras, and it's like, you know, just village to village to village. Walking Padyatra with a cart drawn by either people or a bullock or a horse or whatever it is, and going to the next place, and sometimes by vehicle going to the next place. That's one specific program. I don't know, were you with us in Vrindavan? Our paths crossed the Padyatra several times. In fact, when we went to Ramgat, one of their members, kind of an Abhidhuta type of personality, god brother, was, you know, just kind of lost, and I asked, you know, what are you doing? Oh, I'll catch up. I said, do you know where they went? I think so. Akhiladhar is his name. Have you met Akhiladhar? He's character. So, but you know, there, besides characters, they have some very sober devotees. So that's one, Padayatra. I don't know if Lokanath Maharaj is still doing the bullock cart program. It's different, but similar. Bhakti Marg Swami has his own by walking. You know, cross country in Canada, and he did the same thing in Guyana from this place to that place, and in a village each night, in a village each night, in a village each night. So there are programs like that where persons can participate. If you know, where's the willingness is another thing, but the program is there. Just like farm communities, how important sustainable agriculture. How many people are willing to live on farms? We've invited Dhruva and Parijata to be the keynote speaker at our president's meeting and GBC meeting next week. I called him just this morning to make sure he's coming, make sure he knew that he's the keynote speaker. He knew when he's going, and he registered, but he registered in his wife's name instead of his name, and I didn't see his name on the list. So, because they have so much, but they have so few people to help them, and that, you know, there's not willingness. It's not like not an important program, not getting enough attention, or making it a keynote message. But who's willing? So, similarly with village preaching or science preaching or, you know, other types of preaching. There's a strategy, and there's not a whole lot of volunteers.
On the same note, Maharaj, if someone, you know,
another is Namahatta. Something that I'm coincidentally, kind of indirectly involved with is the Namahatta program in West Bengal, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur started, is still going on. There's a whole Namahatta program department. There's a Bengali man that lives in Memphis, Tennessee, Dr. Shivendra Das, that because his father did something, he built a temple in now Bangladesh, he, having resource, wanted to build a little place in the area that's just on the Bangladesh border in West Bengal. So he did. He built a temple, a little one, and then he wanted to give it to ISKCON, but not in the ISKCON name, because he thought, you know, we might liquidate it because it's not considered important. We just, like, you know, swallow it and send it over to Mayapur. So it's got its own Usharani trust. I'm a director of that trust, and it's right, you know, in the area of like 10 Namahatta programs. But that, you know, that's in a certain area, and then there's other areas in other areas. And so I'm now a little more familiar with the Namahatta program than I was before. But it's flourishing, and it's one of the major ways in Bangladesh, where there isn't money to build the temple, but they have, you know, scads and scores of Namahatta programs in villages. So the strategy works where there are people that want to participate in it. This is my message to you.
Thank you. And so, suppose in the Bhakti Ruksha setup, sometimes, you know, some people may come who are not, they're from the villages, so their origin is village, they're not that much, you know, modern educated, they won't be. Like, the way we preach is to, you know, see if is there a potential preacher among the group, you know, we can groom them accordingly. But if people are not so educated, they cannot read, like, you know, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam and all that, but they're very much interested in chanting, devotion is there, service is there. So how far we go with them?
It depends on your capacity. That's how far we go with them. Commonly what's done, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur strategy was, there are four classes of men, and amongst all groups, there's someone who's a leader of the group. So you'll find the leader of the group, and you qualify the leader of the group to train those who are not qualified to lead. You focus on that person who can then lead others. And if there isn't one amongst them, it's just, you know, one family, then you engage them, you know, accordingly. And because everybody has a different nature. Is that all right? Okay, somebody else. You have another. Oh, we're back here. Somebody's phone is vibrating.
It's inside there.
Oh?
I hear it over there.
Okay.
These are questions about some of the seminars you have given, Gunnar. Can I ask those?
Why not?
Okay. This one is about the Brahma Samhita.
Okay.
Okay. One of the statements that you made was that people that are attached to the three phases of time cannot make it to the spiritual world. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I don't remember the context of saying that, but simply this, the spiritual world, Prabhupada's language is, time is conspicuous by its absence. So if one who wants to go to Krishna has to be prepared to accept, you know, the reality of Krishna, his form and his qualities and his pastimes, and this sense of timelessness, although Jiva Goswami comments in his Sandarbhas that although there is no time as we know it, there is a sense of time. You know, going from here to there, going out to herd the cows, there's a sense of time, although it's eternal. There's the sense of time that Bhaktisiddhanta uses this Sanskrit term, vibhrama vilas. Brahma, B-H-R-A-M-A, means it's one of the four defects of the conditioned soul. It means, you know, illusion, B-H-R-A-M-A. It doesn't really exist. And vibhrama is really illusioned. Vibhrama vilas. Vilas is pastime. The pastime of, he calls it seeming error. Vibhrama vilas. And that's how the spiritual world works. There is no time. There's the sense of time. Like Krishna is gone. The feeling of there's meeting and then there's separation. The sense of time.
Is it more like a change thing?
It's a rasa thing. It's a transcendental sentiment thing. And for that transcendental sentiment, the internal potency acts in such a way, it seems as if something. There's that really long purport in Brahma Samhita. I didn't discuss that, but, you know, part two we'll discuss it. In that long purport, where there's this seeming error. Like Mother Jasoda being the mother and Nanda Maharaj being the father of Krishna. There's no birth pastime. But there's the sense that Krishna is the son of Jasoda and Nanda. Now that's not so. He's the supreme absolute truth. He's the source of everything. But there's this sense. And there's no pastime of birth to say, okay, here's my birth certificate, I'm their son. There's no pastime of birth. But there's that sense. So it's a rasa thing. It's a to facilitate the flow of love, there's the sense of things, as if there's time, although there isn't.
And it's not progressive. There's changes, but there's not.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Can I ask another?
Sure.
Okay, you talked about also some tridents that keep away
unqualified persons.
Unqualified people. So one of the questions I had was, you know, if they're unqualified, how come they were able to get
that far?
Yeah.
Well, it's like the Kumaras were able to get to the gate, but they weren't able to get in. If you can't keep them, check them out. This makes noise, but people are putting their chadras on, so we'll go back and forth between.
That's fake, by the way.
What?
Here.
Yeah. Are you okay? You're.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. So, which is better, noise?
Better.
Or no noise. No noise. If you get cold, we'll plug it in. For now, you can shut it off.
That might be better than anyone else's noise.
No, I didn't say that. I don't know how she
just
speak
at
that way on the behalf.
He's innocent.
The wrong thing.
He's innocent.
He just came in.
Yeah.
So.
So I was concerned about what happened to those people that
turn
away with that
child. They it's not like they get to the gate and they can't come in. It's it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means they're not allowed. They cannot gain entrance. Now, by the way, I didn't say these things. Brahma Samhita says these things, and I was just speaking about it, just a clarification. But the tridents represent, a spear with three points is a trident. So the three phases of time, past, present, future, is one of the aspects of the trident, or what's the other one? Three modes of nature. Those that are influenced by or afflicted by the three modes of nature can't enter. So it's not like, okay, I've got the three modes of nature, but I'm going to try to do an end run and like sneak my way into Goloka. I won't get that far. I won't get to the gate and get turned back. I won't get that far. That seemed to be what your question is.
Yeah.
It prevents people long before they get to the gate.
Where do they go then?
Where do they go? They don't get that far. They go to places according to the modes of nature, or according to whatever their attachments are. That's where they go. And the universes are created with different positions accordingly. According to the association with the modes of nature, the people have a liking for. And then corresponding influences of time. On the higher planets, different influence of time. Above the heavenly planets, even different, and so forth.
Okay, thank you very much.
That was it. Yeah. So for now.
I get a better idea now.
Okay. Something else? Yes.
Maharaj, for this age, it is recommended that we should chant the Maha Mantra. And the meaning behind the chant is to ask Krishna to engage me in your service. But then, shouldn't it be recommended that we should do the service? I mean, we are asking for service all the time.
Oh, yeah. There's not an implication. Just ask, but don't do. Just keep asking, but don't do. The implication is... I'm not sure what you're asking about.
So my My question is that, so instead of chanting or asking Lord Krishna to engage me on in the service, we
just do service.
Yes.
Just do service. Okay. Okay, I got the question. So it's a transformation of heart from independent enjoyment to enjoyment through the medium of service. It's a something that may help me to offer an explanation is the way that Bhaktisiddhanta and Jiva Goswami describe the position of the Gayatri mantras, particularly Kam Gayatri and Gopal mantra, because they're both identified in Brahma Samhita, and their relation with Mahamantra. The Mahamantra is pervasive. Mahamantra is awakening the dormant spirit of wishing to be in Krishna's service. I say dormant because we're not thinking like that, although we're eternally Krishna's servant. But we're in a diseased state, not thinking eternally Krishna's servant, we're thinking something else, thinking our independent enjoyment. So the Maha Mantra is to transform the independent enjoyment to the orientation, reviving the orientation of Krishna's enjoyment. That's the Maha Mantra. Please engage me in your service. Changing the orientation from selfishness to Krishna-centered consciousness. Certainly service follows. But it's the purpose of the mantra is to change the orientation. And then it's not just service, it's your whole being. But consciousness drives everything. Desire. Think of it in terms of Buddhism for a moment, not too long. But Buddhism teaches desire implicates us in suffering. Samsara and suffering, repeated suffering. So impersonalism is become desireless. There are varieties of approaches within Mayavad and Buddhist teachings, varieties within Buddhist teachings to become desireless. Our teaching is desire properly, and that's no material desire. Nishkam bhakti, desire service to Krishna. And that's the Maha Mantra. And then there's varieties of that in the form of tastes for service, rasa. And our Gayatri mantras are specific for awakening rasa, and even specifically rasa in the mood of the gopis. Our Gayatri mantras are specific in that regard. Because it's Braja Bhakti. And even where there's the other rasas, Madhurya rasa is present. The cowherd boys, their rasa with Krishna is friendship. But it's not. In Vaikuntha, there's this language. Excuse me for getting a little detailed, but it has to do with your question. In Vaikuntha, it's called. Forget the term, but. Absolute servitude. It may be Kevala Dasya, something like that. But in Vraja, it's not Kevala Dasya. It's mixed with enhancing the happiness of Krishna, ultimately towards the love that Krishna feels for Radha. So the servants do like that, the cowherd boys do like, his friends do like that, the parents do like that. But, you know, the basis is simply service. It's at the basis, and then other things are added, according to the science of rasa. If you've read Nectar Devotion, you'll know that. So, the Maha Mantra is awakening once again, the desire to be in Krishna's service, as opposed to be independently seeking happiness. I'm just repeating that. That's the Maha Mantra. And we're not just praying for service and not doing service. We're praying for the reawakening of that consciousness. So it will fill our services with that consciousness. Because someone can just do service without that awakened Krishna should be pleased, and they're thinking something else. Because if they're not thinking Krishna should be pleased, guess who is at the center? If it's not Krishna, me, or mine. Mine means my group, or whatever that is, my family, my race, my nation, my tribe, you know, whatever the my thing is. That's what service is about, as I'm engaging in service. And I call it service to God. But it's a euphemism. It's service to mine. Because then on the other side is not mine. Invariably, even if someone speaks on the platitude of universal brotherhood, it's a platitude only. It's a bluff. Unless one comes to the spiritual conception. It's a bluff. And I can say, I know, I have a spiritual conception. But unless Krishna is there, and devotion to Krishna is there, we'll say it softer. It's incomplete. Say it more vividly. It's a bluff. It's a euphemism. Sounds good. But the mode of goodness is not pure. And service is not, in the mode of goodness, is not pure as long as there's this taint. And how do you get rid of the taint? The bhakti dissolves the taint. It lifts one to transcendence. Because what are the options? Well, make everything zero. Or give it a bad name, call it false. Jagat Mithya, Brahman Satya. And I'll do a service, philanthropy and altruism in the name of, I'm serving Brahman. But without shelter of Krishna, what is it? It's another kind of happiness. Another kind of... So, there has to be shelter. And that shelter is in the position of service. So the Maha Mantra is... It's for our own heart. Not like wanting something outside of us to come in our purview so we can grab a hold of it and do some service. It's a transformation of consciousness. That's why we chant Hare Krishna. And following the chanting Hare Krishna, consciously engage in service to Krishna as we're doing our service. Because otherwise, we all have the experience, so it's no secret, we do service without thinking of Krishna. We do service. Because we're constitutionally servants. We do service without mindfulness of Krishna. What's the mindfulness come from? From the attachment to Krishna. And we're always mindful of Him. But we forgot Him. And we've gone the other direction. Yes?
Good morning. Not only the body acts as the anchor, but the bodily conception also. And by the time it is recognized, and when it is known that very little time is left on this planet, there is a desire to serve Krishna, but now there is not even, the bodily functions are not possible. How do we extend the disciplic successions to that person?
To that person?
Yes.
To that person?
My mother.
Huh?
My mother.
And your mother?
Yes.
Okay. Depends on what mother can receive. That's how. Without naming names, one devotee has a father who is not like a gross atheist, but is an atheist. He doesn't go around parading saying, I don't believe in God, and he doesn't do that. But he's like, you know, I don't have any God consciousness in me. You know, subtle, but that's his position. And his son's a devotee. So his son knows that he can't talk to his father about Krishna because his father will, you know, get disturbed and, you know, won't listen, get up and walk away. Tell him to be quiet. Something. Then the devotee continued, just, you know, being a good son, not talking about Krishna, but being a good son. So his, you know, father thought, wow, this whatever the thing is, it's making you a good person. And then some time passed, and then he got diagnosed with cancer. So now the father is able to hear from the good son about Krishna. So, according to the capacity of the elder, one can extend. Some persons, you know, even, you know, in the final stages, they're I'm an atheist. I'm going to go down, you know, denying God.
I want to share one.
Let me, he's still got churning something. You're okay with?
That is clear, Maharaj.
According to capacity is the answer.
Yes.
And if the capacity is very modest, then according to the capacity, at least demonstrate by achar and prachar qualities that will soften the disposition towards you, the son. And so the mother or whoever can think, oh, they've become nice. I mean, they want to take credit for that, and that's okay, but they've become nice. However they were before, they become nice, or nicer, and appreciating that. And indirectly then appreciating Krishna, and the role that Krishna's had in your life. And that makes the heart open more. So according to capacity. Okay, you're very enthusiastic to say something. Go right ahead. To add to that.
This is only sharing the experience which I had, Maharaj. This incidentally started out with involving Mahamantra Prabhu as well. This is before a yatra. I was not fully aware of the dates. Incidentally, I met Prabhu in New Vrindavan, and he reminded me about the date. And it was not in my mind at all. I was a bit disturbed.
Make it short. No, this sounds like a long one.
My mom was, as he was talking about his mom, I was just remembering. She has the cancer, but she was just feeling better. And due to your mercy, Krishna's mercy, it triggered me to get her to yatra. That was the only time where she spent time with me. All 11 days she attended Mangalarati, and all 11 days was in yatra. But after just soon after yatra, again she's into hospital right now, still going on chemo. So as to Prabhu's point, it is all mercy. If we have endeavor, enthusiasm, probably might have happened. So just a sharing of.
Now, you had another hand-raising question earlier. Is that gone?
Earlier, I have. To the question what Prabhu said about the chanting, and also Ajit Krishna Prabhu has said about when we chant, we ask for service. And we got your answer, Maharaj, but it is an extended to it. when we ask for service, Krishna is giving through a lot of different ways. Whether it is through pain, whether it is through... it's not only service, okay, some Prabhu giving, Maharaj giving, or someone giving a service. We need to be able to digest. I don't know how to deal with that kind of a service which has been given to us through the circumstances. Maybe it is anarthas, what we are going through. When we chant, as you said in Yatra as well, we plead for service. And that service is coming in some form to us. So how should we recognize and act upon that service?
Have your receiver on, that's how. And if you don't get the signal, just leave your receiver on. Krishna will send another signal. You don't get that one, leave your receiver on. Krishna will send another signal. Until you get it. The reason we don't get it is we're not in a receiving mode. We're in a enjoying mode. I want to enjoy. Krishna, please give me some service. The predominant voice is selfishness. And in between, there are little, blips of, I want to be in service. So a service opportunity comes, we don't get it because we're thinking about my enjoyment. And this doesn't have to do with my enjoyment. So I don't even see the service. Now if I want service, it's like this or like this, like this. It's not, that's about my enjoyment. It's our foolishness. That's why we don't see the opportunity. So how to see the opportunity? Keep your receiver on. Keep chanting with the intent of transforming the heart's aspiration from Maya to Krishna-centered. Just keep going there consciously. And then, things that you didn't see, you'll start to see. Okay, you have something.
I'm coming back to the theme of this weekend, and yesterday you had such a nicely explained Keval Ashtakam.
Mm.
And it was so beautiful to hear that, because I've heard that so many times, but I think I enjoyed the most yesterday.
Mm.
But the thing is, when we were talking about chanting there, it was very matter-of-factly stated that you should chant because it's a jewel, you should not miss it. But I was thinking of, there should be some song where it goes deeper, telling about why and how.
There's many, many, many.
getting into that.
Many. So many.
For the chanting.
For chanting, yes. Please consider, our acharyas have achieved perfection through chanting, and they're certainly going to describe again and again why and how.
Yeah.
Sure. And not only in songs and essays and commentary and,
many. I know, but I was looking for
some
this kind of song where we're talking about Harinam.
Okay, well, when we have our Festival of the Holy Name, one of the things that we always do is there's an hour to an hour and a half of songs on exactly what you're looking for. So I'm not the song person, I assign that to other people, but I can suggest some names of persons, and they can point out this, here's where some of these recordings are, da 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 da. And would you like that? Where those songs are.
I would love that.
Anybody in the room here want to volunteer that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Between Badahari and Sri Rupa, they as some of our devotees like to just different melodies. I mean, I was recently, just before here, I was in St. Louis, and Panchatantra Prabhu, who was in Alachua, now lives near the St. Louis Temple with his wife, Yovanananda. He sang two melodies, and the second one was really nice. I asked him, "Where did you hear that melody?" He said, "Just last night I heard Leelananda Prabhu a recording, and I picked it up." And I said, "Wow, you just heard it last night." So some persons have a fascination for the holy name in terms of very sweet melodies that make it really easy and, you know, like yummy to get into the holy name. And others, Badahari and Sri Rupa, are persons who they love the songs of our acharyas. They love, and they can recite the words and the meanings and the mood, and just, you know, you have to hit the stop button because they'll just keep going. They love it. So each of us has a different liking and taste. So those are two that have that. She's learned from him, but she just has that on her own too. Okay. She's like a teenager, but yes, she's by age, but her disposition is special. Yes, I'm going to be bad enough.
Thank you.
I know.
Sometimes, lately, I like to just chant the tune that Srila Prabhupada probably is most well known for singing, you know,
sure.
Hare Krishna, like that. Sort of, because it seems easy just to focus on the holy name and not the musical content as much. And I was wondering what you think, like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like it's easier, and I thought I read Srila Prabhupada once sort of discouraged people from getting too musically elaborate in their kirtans. Of course, I love musically elaborate kirtans too, so I'm just wondering what you thought about it.
I already answered that, but I'll say it again. You know, different persons have different likings.
Yeah.
And some like this and some like that. And what's important is not this is better than that, because it's whether one is doing this or doing that, Krishna is at the center. So the focus needs to go to Krishna. And Vatsal was speaking on this point when we, because he was with us in our japa retreat in Houston. He lives in Houston,
mm-hmm.
And he likes, more than likes, he's absorbed in kirtan. I mean, he's absorbed in kirtan. When he's not in kirtan, he's in kirtan. When he's in kirtan, he's in kirtan. I was commenting this the other day.
Like cardamom?
Huh? Yeah, like, yeah. So, he was commenting that, you know, Badahari said, you know, some people, a criticism is made of young people sometimes, that they like kirtan, but they don't chant japa. And just before I was in Houston, I was in Alachua, and just before I was there, Madhava was there, and they did a 24-hour kirtan, but he spent 4 days, mainly with the youth, hammering on them that they need to do japa,
mm-hmm.
not just kirtan, because it's a youth thing, certainly in Alachua. We don't do japa, we do kirtan. We don't wash pots either. We do kirtan. We do kirtan. We don't do other things. We're kirtaneers. But he was lasting, you know, at length. I wasn't there. I heard from the others that he, you know, in the various ways in which he emphasized that. You know, he shared with Tamahar Prabhu that he doesn't chant kirtan until he's completed his 16 rounds. He will not do kirtan until he's, as much as he likes kirtan, until he's completed his 16 rounds. Kind of like a personal discipline, but, you know, as a statement to the youth that like kirtan but not japa. So, Vatsal Badahari said some people like the, you know, kirtan part more, they have their reasoning, but really, that if there's a taste for the holy name in kirtan, whether it's musical or just one melody or whatever it is, it's the holy name, it's not the melody or the musical accompaniment. But then Vatsala elaborated it saying there's an exchange when we do kirtan. You know, with this person, that person, and so we have our, like our band, our, you know, there's a social conveyance, social exchange. And that's something that we like, in addition to the musicalness of, you know, the voice and the melody, and, you know, so it's in one sense it's a distraction, but in another sense it's dovetailing, it's probably connecting the desire for social exchange with Krishna, and the desire for hearing something pleasing and creating something pleasing, because creating, by the way, is the mode of passion. So it's passion with Krishna. But so the real test, he was saying, is when we're just sitting alone chanting japa. And is there the same attraction? If not, then we can know why. So for you, the attraction is simply the holy name. So, but like, in similar but different is Madhava, who has a reputation for, you know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours singing one melody, and then it's his turn again, and it's the same melody, and he comes back next year, and it's the same melody. Mm-hmm. Although it's not the one that you like, it's the same melody. Making, you know, a similar statement in a different way. What's important is the name. No, I'm not done yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because of your inner conviction, or whatever the right way to say it is, your commitment to the goal, you like that one melody. It's Prabhupada's melody, it's simple, it's not difficult for anyone to participate, any new audience, any inexperienced, musically experienced person can pick up on it, really. So the focus is just one thing. And that moves your heart because of that. There may be some other persons who, well, while that's nice, they have another gift. It's a little bit, not the same as, but it's a little bit like Lord Brahma and his mature realization in the form of the Govinda prayers, after which he still has a desire to create a universe. So there's not a lack of attraction for Krishna, but there's also some other desire. So how are those people, that's in the mature stage, to oppose that other desire? It may not just be one melody. And then there are persons that are not at that absorbed in Krishna stage, but they do like music, and they do like the social exchange element of kirtan. So what are they to do? So there's another medium for them. So, you know, that suits their need for going toward Krishna while fulfilling the material side of their life, you know, a need for, you know, social interaction and happiness through social interaction to the medium of kirtan. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. It's more than fine. It's transcendental. It's transcendental to the degree they don't get lost in the social exchange and the musicality. And unfortunately, by what they do after the kirtan is over, you know, the focus wasn't upon Krishna. It was upon the social exchange. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, better that than just the social exchange, minus the kirtan. And you know, so the example setting person like Madhava, who is, you know, one of their heroes, is, you know, lets him have it. Sure. Whereas somebody else might, you know, there's only, you know, doesn't they can't relate to and can't they, you know, they can't relate to each other, says the same message, they're not going to receive it well. So it takes a whole, you know, variety. There's diversity in within the realm of practice, and there's diversity within the realm of perfection. And that's nice. Maybe somebody wants it otherwise, but I don't think Krishna does. There's diversity, lots of diversity. Okay. She her voice came out first, then you. But I heard your voice.
Ah, okay.
So go right ahead, and he'll be patient, and
yeah,
he's next.
Yes. Master, you said that we not like just washing pot and things like that. We're doing kirtan. Does that mean any kind of service we're doing here has not ordinary like washing pot or ordinary sweeping or ordinary? We are in kirtan, right? That's what you mean?
I don't know what you're... What you're saying is not what I said. Let me say what I said.
Yes.
There are some young people...
Yes.
...that they have one liking only. Well, in terms of service, they have one liking only. They like kirtan. And if they're offered other types of service, like japa... No. Washing pots? No. Kirtan? Yes. I was speaking about their mentality. I wasn't saying anything other than that. So, from Prabhupada's perspective, they're all important.
Yes.
They're all important. And hearing this other, you know, question over here about why chanting without the service follows the chanting. And not only service follows the chanting, but serving in Krishna consciousness follows chanting properly. And even when washing pots, either explicitly by singing or remembering Krishna in some other form, one is Krishna conscious as a result of hearing while washing the pots or cleaning the floor or cooking the vegetable or, you know, or whatever it is one's doing. It continues, at least the consciousness of the person for whom I'm doing this will continue if the chanting has been done nicely. Go ahead.
The reason I'm asking that because I even know when I used to wash the pots downstairs, and when I will finish washing the pot, it will be as if I chant 16 rounds. I will feel as if I chant 16.
Good. Rounds. So then you get 32
yeah.
rounds every day.
That's why I want to.
And if you were washing pots next to Cardama Muni, you'd hear, you know, 48 rounds. As he'd be chanting, singing, or saying the Maha Mantra while washing the pots.
But even if we don't sing, because we are from you, the pure devotee of the Lord, so since we know why we're doing it, so we get under good consciousness thinking of you, pure devotee of the Lord.
Until we know why we're doing.
Yes.
We're still getting benefit because it's Krishna's pot.
Yes.
And it's Krishna's kitchen.
Yes.
But we get more benefit if we can be mindful of for whom we're doing this.
Yes.
And the way to get mindful is by hearing. And then it awakens remembrance. Oh, that's right. I forgot Krishna. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, Maharaj. I'd like to share something with everybody here in this room for just getting initiated and doing initiate for a long time. When we take initiation, initiation is to continue our spiritual life to the topmost level.
Mm.
So we're supposed to try to engage the mind in service, in chanting, in Harinam Sangirtan, especially Harinam Sangirtan. Harinam Sangirtan helps you to get rid of most of your false ego.
Get rid of false ego.
A lot.
Book distribution does a good job, too.
But when I say Harinama, it's consumed. I come to the Harinama, and then I have the book distribution, everything. Because when you're doing Kirtan out there, you got to have books. You got to be giving out books. You give out a lecture, you know, while you're chanting your stuff, you give out a lecture, and then you say, here's a book, read this book. You know? And I realize that a lot of people are attracted to different melodies, you know, when you're chanting. So I may chant my mantra in this way, and some people is following. And then you're chanting a different tune, and a lot more people get into the mantra. That is when you're chanting it, like in a gathering, especially in the train cars. But what I really want to say is that I want to ask a question. When I get up and I chant in the morning time, sometimes I get a call after I don't chant, because I get up 3:30 and do my chanting before. And then someone will call, is this Kardama when you answer the phone? Yes, I answer Hare Krishna. We want someone to come and do some chanting in a temple in Jackson Heights.
And they call you at 3:30 in the morning?
So my 5 o'clock for 5:24.
Really?
Yeah, they just get a message that they need somebody and they have nobody to talk. And I would say, okay, I'm coming. But when I'm chanting, I'm saying, Krishna, after I almost finished, I'll say, Krishna, what service I have to do today? And we might get a call to come and chant. So I say, oh, Krishna engaged me today. You know? And I'm going to chant. Last week, Saturday, that happened to me.
6 days?
Not 6 days, but mostly on weekends.
Okay.
You know, it was Ekadasi, I get up early. I said, I don't want to take no prasadam, I just want to see if I can keep the whole day fast. So I started chanting. As I finished my chanting, I get a call. We have a program and we need somebody to come and chant for the program. So I said, okay, Krishna will engage me. So I said, yes, I'm coming. So I went and I chant. They told me, come and chant for 2 hours. So from 11, 1, 2, it went into 3, 4 o'clock. Then by 5, then the other group came. And then I was saying, oh, Krishna, you're really helping me out to keep this. You know? So I just want to say, you know, devotional service is really joyfully performed. And if we do it with the attitude that, oh, Krishna is engaging me and chanting with that in our heart that we want to be engaged in service, the service is going to come. Even if we're going to temple and see the devotee say, Prabhu, I need some help to do something here. And I say, why should I go and do that? I don't really wash pots. I don't sweep. I don't do this. No, we're refusing service. You know? So anyway, go. Something is going to turn up. Once you're chanting and you really want service, something is going to turn up for you to get that service. And you have to realize, oh, Krishna is engaging me here. And you grab at it. But if we reject it, then... So what I want to say, Maharaj, when I get these calls to come and do this chanting, is that really service? You know, that is
Krishna's ask. But I would recommend that you either put your phone on vibrate mode when you're chanting your japa, and it says the call can go to voicemail, or just when people call when you're chanting japa, you say, Prabhu, I'm chanting japa, do you mind calling back in 2 hours or whatever it is? But other than that, you know, interrupting your japa kind of a call. Sure, it's service. And the service according to your liking, and your liking is certainly a glorious liking, but other persons may get other calls to do other types of service, and that's the fruit of their chanting too, because they have another liking. Yeah. Lord Brahma is, you know, creating universe. This is Garbhodakshay Vishnu. When are you going to get that universe created, please? Oh, coming right up. Okay, let me know. Send me a text message when it's halfway done. Different strokes for different folks. And that's completely natural and desirable. But the holy name needs to be at the center of those diverse. This is Bhakti Sandarbha Jiva Goswami. Any of the other processes of devotional service can bring one to perfection, but the chanting of the holy name must be there. You have something?
I guess I'm related to Vrindavan Yatra. When I was in Vrindavan, I did not have chance to go to the Jaipur, but I attended Vrindavan Yatra.
Okay.
So there it was completely different.
Completely different?
Whatever we do here means whole day, 10 days, completely devotional service.
Not completely different. You chant, you got up in the morning, you took your bath and chanted your japa, and put on your dhoti and things like that. It's not completely different.
So, I mean, it's like to go to the job and all those things, engaging in other service there means completely full time devoted towards the devotional service, engaging. So after coming, because I went to home, I was staying at my hometown also for a week, and there also I tried, it was really nice. And then after coming here, I'm trying to balance myself.
Not the same nice, huh?
So, but still I'm hankering that Vrindavan.
So that's the comment, what's the question?
So how to, means, still I'm hankering, how it is possible I should come to the reality, you know, this is the, now I have to go to the work and do the job and unable to chant the 32 round or more rounds like that. So
if you could see the smile on his face. Yeah, man.
It only happens there. There's a different energy.
Huh?
It's a totally different energy being there. Then you come back and...
So he's relating to your statement.
So you survive for about a month after you come back. And then sort of reality sits in, or the weight of everyday life gets to you. And you have a battle with it.
When Prabhupada described, this is another way of responding to your statement and the question, Prabhupada described these five most potent things when he got to, you know, residing in a sacred place. He offered an alternative. Or, remember and hanker for such an opportunity. So maybe you can fall in that category as he and his wife do. Hanker for that experience once again. Now, like you, they also have a child, so they can't just like go do that all the time. They're doing these other things, and there's a purpose for these other things. This is the preaching field, and that's home. So when you're away from home, you're thinking of home. Especially, you know, transcendentally speaking, home is with Krishna. That Krishna's land is Vrindavan. So the heart is there, although I'm somewhere else. So I'm here, this other somewhere else, is Prabhupada's language, is Prabhudatta Desh. The Desh, the place where we bring the message of Krishna to others. So you like doing that. I know you like doing that. And Piari tells me you're really good at it. So, that's your service to your home and, you know, to Krishna when you're away from home. Even when you're away from home, doing that, hankering for being with Krishna, and being in your eternal home with Krishna, is part of going back to Godhead, hankering for that. And periodically, you know, going back and experiencing in a way that you didn't experience previously, yet again, a fresher and newer, and because Krishna is ever fresh, experience of being with Krishna. Like you heard me say yesterday, people that had never been to Vrindavan before saying, "Now I understand the t-shirt. I left my heart in Krishna. I left my heart in Vrindavan. I don't want to leave. I didn't want to leave."
Even Maharaj, I had blister on my leg, and still I was just, by seeing you during Govardhan Parikrama, I was completely behind, but still I was just, I have to finish the Govardhan Parikrama. nothing, just going in the completely different mood, no pain, nothing. And then I went to the doctor. Doctor told me, what you did it? All those problems came out. Then she gave antibiotics, it was okay. But completely, it is hard to describe in words.
And that's the consciousness that we need to cultivate, even we're not there. Just remembering, appreciating, hearing the glories of, you know, again and again, just like connect, and then recognizing while away from home, I have a service. Exactly as Prabhupada did. You know, at least, you know, that exact consciousness is Prabhupada, but by that example, that's what he did. And his appreciation was a million times more complete than our appreciation, and he left to bring Krishna to us. So you have opportunities and you have venues that you've created to give Krishna to people. That's your service to Krishna. And your family, it's your service to Krishna. Mahamantra and Shankadhar.
Guru Maharaj, in the Houston Japa retreat, you use the word matihi.
Well, the Bhagavatam speaks of that, yes?
Can you explain it, Maharaj? I lost the context and name.
Go back and hear the recordings. It was the morning class on Friday. The not the Bhagavatam class, but the morning section on consciousness. Those are two parts, consciousness and intention. So it's the consciousness class. And the consciousness concept is when we're chanting, we'll go down a little bit. Even when Ajamila was chanting, not intending to call Narayana's name by, you know, calling him by calling his name, just intending to call his son. That was his intention. But when Krishna heard the word matihi is used, he thought, Krishna thought, oh, you heard this like 15 times, I kept repeating it. Oh, he's calling my name. That's matihi. It's Krishna. It was to be conscious of the fact that when you call Krishna's name, he not only hears, but he feels, oh, he's calling my name. I must protect him from Maya. So our consciousness needs to connect with Krishna and how Krishna is conscious of our calling him. It's a relationship that's established. He's present in his name and he responds by not only he comes in the form of his name, but his messengers to protect us. That with the matihi. It's a quality of Krishna. Another quality mentioned was he considers whatever he does for us to be insignificant, but whatever we do for him to be very significant with the Sudama story. And those are just, those are qualities of the person whose name we're calling. And the name is not different than him, which is a separate point, but when we call his name, he feels something. And he does something based on that feeling he's feeling. He's very personal. That's the matihi message.
Guru Maharaj, one of the qualities that attracts me in you is the gravity. I want to understand, because you are the emblem of that quality, and I want to understand how can I cultivate that from the stage where I am.
How to cultivate that? one thing for sure that you've heard hundreds of times probably, is by association with persons who have certain qualities, you develop qualities like those who you associate with. There's one answer to your question. I remember very early, 1970, there was a photograph of Prabhupada sitting, I think it was in the backyard of 26 Second Avenue, just sitting. And he looked very grave. Just a snapshot, you know. And somebody brought him a picture, brought to Prabhupada a picture of that. You know, a reproduction of that photo, and said, I thought spiritual people were supposed to be happy, and you look sad. It was just vague. And Prabhupada immediately replied, "Oh, I remember that. I was in a moment of ecstasy." So external may look one thing, and internal is something else. Gravity doesn't mean an absence of levity. One can be lighthearted, but if it, you know, depending upon the circumstance, deeply rooted in thought of Krishna, and in that sense, grave, as opposed to, you know, fizzy, or bubbly, carbonated, you know. Open the top and all the fizz goes out and then it's flat. So what gravity is, you know, there's something deep and it's fathomless in its depth. That's Prabhupada. So sometimes that gravity would be exhibited in laughter, sometimes that gravity would be exhibited in silence, sometimes that gravity would be, you know, have different, but it was the depth of Krishna was always palpable. Cultivating the quality of gravity is deepening one's attachment to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And then appropriate for the circumstance, particularly inspired by Krishna as appropriate for the circumstance, one's countenance, the face is the index of the mind, and one's words will be with Krishna. But this, you know, deep thought in Krishna is gravity. So rather than the superficial kind of thought of Krishna going from one, you know, one circumstance of life to the next circumstance of life, kind of like a child, where in one moment the child is laughing, and the next moment they're crying, the next moment it's laugh, the next moment it's talk, and, you know, there's no gravity. It's only, you know, it's very, there isn't depth to it. It's moment to moment. So gravity is thinking beyond just like, you know, the circumstances of the moment, but, you know, something more deep and profound and ultimately Krishna. That's gravity. And when there's gravity, then whatever the external is, it produces what's described in chapter 6. Indifference to duality. That's a symptom of gravity. One isn't moved this way or that way by duality. Now they're praising me, now they're dishonoring me, now, you know, whatever the features of duality are. This, because of a deeper absorption and thought of Krishna, like Prahlad. by remembrance of Krishna, that there's this in these prayers by Haridas Thakur, specific in relation to the chanting of the holy name. He describes with humility how he has the absence of gravity. Ha ha ha. And he points to other great personalities, Draupadi, who was protected by her remembrance of Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj was protected by his remembrance of Krishna. And different examples of great personality are protected by remembrance of Krishna. That's a demonstration of their gravity. Praying for that capacity for gravity, so he'll always remember Krishna. Of course he did, but he's speaking in those humble ways because that's part of his character, his, as an elevated Vaishnava, thinking of himself in a very humble way. So cultivate deeper absorption in each of the things that you do, how it connects you with Krishna. And stay mindful of that connection with Krishna. Cultivate that connection with Krishna, and therein you'll find gravity. Where in some circumstances, as Prabhupada was, you've seen pictures. He says, he would laugh and laugh and laugh, and then sometimes very serious, sometimes silent. They're all exhibitions of gravity because they're all with deep thought, absorption in thought of Krishna. That's the quality.
Yes, yeah. My question is, as my phone alarm came on just now for Gayatri, the stream is, I want to ask this question. If you involve in a kirtan, you did not chant the Gayatri, the evening Gayatri, and 12 o'clock in Egypt after 12 many nights, and you didn't do your evening Gayatri, that is one way. The next way is that I'm sometimes woken and couldn't do the lunchtime Gayatri, and you do it in the evening. When you're doing this, 6 o'clock, you guys okay.
The evening kirtan is one thing that you chant when the kirtan is over. And I've seen you do that when kirtan is over. Everyone's like milling around talking, and you know, you're chanting Gayatri. I've seen you do that. Whatever o'clock it is, that's okay. But when you're at work, it's not like you're leading kirtan, you do a timeout. And even if you don't do a lunch timeout, because it's like, you know, an intense, you know, marathon to get something finished or whatever, do a timeout. I'm sure your co-workers will honor the fact that you'll want to do a timeout.
Okay. What I want to say is, like, it looks like you're doing work and I think you're, like, you're not clean enough to do the Gayatri, so that's why I don't need to. Thank you.
It's so specifically instructed, that's not okay. So it's trisandhyam. Not, you know, I'll do three of them in the morning, so I have a busy day today.
No, I don't have any time frame. You know, I know you can't do three in the morning. What I'm saying is that, let me say lunchtime, Gayatri come and you're not, like, you know, you're walking and your body's sweaty and all these things. So I think it is not right to do it for that hour. So I'm asking if it's okay just to do that,
I understand the question.
Sorry.
I got it.
Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification. Wash your hands and go and chant Gayatri.
Okay. All right.
Because that's the particular occupation. You're supposing it's not occupation. Supposing it's, you know, you're in Trinidad and it's, you know, it's whatever the hot month is, and you're sweating. Well, maybe I shouldn't chant Gayatri because I'm sweating and it's hot out. You go, you wash your hands and you go sit down and chant. Make yourself, you know, at least minimally clean. Because you can't go take a bath. But if you can, you know, so just stop and chant. But we would do that, say, you know, and this is how we were trained. My answer is how we were trained. So we're on Harinam Sankirtan all day long. And it's, you know, it's summertime and it's hot and we're sweating. And it's time for Gayatri. We stop and chant Gayatri. And you know, somebody has to stand to make sure that people don't come up and disturb us while we're chanting Gayatri. We engage them in conversation or whatever, that if they have a question or something, and then we finish our Gayatri. We don't go back to the temple and take a shower and come back out and then resume kirtan. Just carry on. You know, it's circumstance.
Yeah.
Okay?
In the case of missing the Gayatri, that was Olia's night. Olia's night, we were chanting.
Which one?
We were doing kirtan in the Krishna Balaram temple.
Okay.
And, well, I was like one of the drummer there, playing the drum and into the kirtan, chanting and dancing. And 12 o'clock came, and I remember that I had to chant my Gayatri like about 12:30. After the RT,
okay.
I want to know if that is...
It's okay, but next time you find yourself, if your light goes on, it's certainly not desirable, so you try to remember, okay, it's going to be one of those evenings when I'm going to be requested to be in kirtan a lot, so let me just like you just did with your phone,
yeah,
a little reminder, and I take a little break. And they don't have your kirtan, you know, for 10 minutes or whatever, and you're off somewhere chanting Gayatri, and then you come back and play the drum. That's far better than the 12:30 at night or in the morning. But if you didn't put the reminder and you forgot or whatever, before you go on to the next thing, like taking rest, to chant Gayatri. Yes.
Just now you said, and there was a question, recently during the New Year's Eve, we had a Harinam. We went into Ben's Landing in Philadelphia and we chanted till 12. And everybody was celebrating. They were in the mood and they heard the Mridangam. They were dancing with us.
Yeah.
But when we came back, we had Aarti and everything. And then some people sat down there and started chanting. And I said, you're chanting right now. Is it for yesterday or is it for today?
Japa. Or?
Japa.
Okay.
And then Ajit Krishna always stops me between 12 to 4. He said that you don't chant. Chant it. I mean, you chant, but don't count it as chanting. Just take one.
And the reason is?
I just hear that we should start chanting when the Brahma Muhurat, so little before sunrise.
Supposing you don't. Supposing it's before or supposing it's after? What do you do with those?
The question was that when you chant, whether it's counted towards the next day.
I understand the question.
So
I want to hear your reason why between 12 and 4 it doesn't. It's ozone. It's neither yesterday nor today.
So, for me, since I heard that one should start chanting around the Brahma Muhurat, which
okay,
is
supposing it's before, and then what?
So then it won't be, I mean, according to me, I said that it doesn't count towards the next day. I mean, it's nice to chant, but it shouldn't be counted within those 16 rounds.
I know, do you know that, you know who Swavas is? The temple president of the Los Angeles temple. His name is Swavas. He gets up at 1:30 in the morning. And before Mangal Arati, he has all his rounds chanted. Some of them before and some of them during Brahma Muhurta hour. And he's been doing that for 20-something years. That's today's japa. It's not...
Yesterday.
It doesn't count japa. You know Gopal Bhatta, Prabhu, lives in Los Angeles also. He's been doing that for longer. Gets up at 1:30 in the morning, or 2. And... you know, Prabhupada did the same thing. Of course, he did his job a little bit later, but it's the next day. It's the next day. I do that sometimes with travel. You know, I get on a plane. You know, like when you travel from India, the flights leave at whatever it is, some ridiculous hour, and that's the next day's chanting. Because you know you leave at 1:30 in the morning or whatever it is. That's the next day's chanting. Because otherwise, how are you going to do it? So like this particular example, it should, before the person goes on such a, it's a little bit like, I'm responding a little bit like I did with Kardamuni's question. When you're going to be doing something like that, I try to do like this when I have these long journeys, for sure, you know, the previous day's rounds, because you go to the, if you have a 1:30 a.m. departure, then, you know, flying to Guyana, it's the same thing, you'll leave at 1 o'clock in the morning, so the previous day, the day that you're leaving, those are the previous day's rounds, and you get in the plane, and I can't sleep in planes, so I begin my chanting for the next day. It's the next day. Or if you, somebody that goes to bed early, gets up early, the next day, even if it's before Brahma Muhurta, it's the next day. The day starts at midnight, you know, the solar calendar anyway starts at midnight. And it may be the most ideal time for chanting is Brahma Muhurta, but before or after is also, it counts, not nothing, it's the next day. Do we solve a family issue?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mom. You want to add to that, or okay?
What I was thinking that if we didn't, it's one thing that we got up 1 o'clock in the night, and then the next day has begun. But it's another thing that we were awake the whole night, and we are going to sleep at 2 o'clock or whatever. So that's why, so I was thinking that maybe since we are going to be late and we'll sleep at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., it's still the previous day.
Okay. That's a little different. That's a little different. And I would say, you know, for you, because you have that feeling, okay, I'm chanting extra rounds for the previous day, and that's nice. And I'm going to take rest at 2 a.m. because we got back at whatever it was, from whatever it was, and doing some extra chanting from the previous day, then I'm going to take rest, take my morning bath, or whatever it is I get up, and now we begin today's chanting. That's fine. That's maybe ideal. However, another person may have this other, they may have a night job, or who you know, whatever the circumstances, something regular or irregular, and that's part of, you know, I mean, I do it, so I'm not, I wouldn't be able to complete my chanting otherwise. Get to the airport, and it's like 12 o'clock at night, and I'm beginning my chanting for the next day. I've completed the previous day. And so, I mean, I understand your point. I hope you understand this point. I think it's not like one's right and the other's wrong necessarily, but it's the day ends at midnight, and then 12:01 a.m. is the next day. And some people have circumstances of life or a whole lifestyle that requires like that. You two haven't spoken anything yet. You have something?
I do, Maharaj. I just wanted... Anyway, the one thing I thought about was we were talking about people that have different tastes for certain services. And, like, you know, you like one over the other. What about if you become attached to a certain service because you get some kind of reciprocation, a little bit of a, you know, taste for it? Is that wrong to be attached to that as opposed to like really always be thinking, oh, maybe Krishna likes it, so it's good I do it because it pleases Krishna, but somehow deep down maybe you just enjoy the experience of doing something.
I got it.
Attached to that, yeah.
Well, Krishna accepts both. But supposing, but you know, one is more directly mindful of how it's pleasing to Krishna, it's more pleasing to Krishna. It's not, one is not okay, but the other only is okay. They're both okay. but when one is doing something because it is pleasing. So how do you get to the position where you're doing something because it is pleasing to Krishna? Well, one way is to do things that you like to do and become purified, and then it changes from doing because I like it to it's pleasing to Krishna, that's why I like it. That's one way. And another way is to do some of those things, but also do some of the other things. You know, not because I like to do it, but because, like book distribution is an example for many people. Maybe some people just naturally like book distribution, but some other people, it's a surrender. But knowing that it's pleasing to Krishna, there's a happiness in doing because it's pleasing to Krishna. And regardless of how people respond, whether they say yes or no, or you know, get out of here, or you know, whatever their response is, regardless of the response, oh, I'll take 10 of those. Give me one of everything you got. Oh, now I'm happy. Oh, everyone's saying no, now I'm unhappy. So rather than the happiness, unhappiness, just that it's pleasing to Krishna. So doing some of that can be one of the ways to develop happiness from doing something for Krishna. Specifically accepting some things, because I'm thinking, well, what to speak of then? All things, regardless of my likes. You know the example from Nectar Devotion about the description of service. One of the examples of description of service is Krishna's son Pradyumna. And the example that's cited is, if he wanted to do something but Krishna didn't want, then he wouldn't do it, because he knew that Krishna didn't want. And then conversely, if he didn't want to do something but Krishna wanted, he would do that something because Krishna wanted. And that's dasya. That's dasya. Because of the pleasure of Krishna, I do it. And that's the definition of, or the standard of, love. The beloved. The object of love. And their happiness. So, go back to your question. Supposing something happens to give me happiness, and I'm thinking about how it gives me happiness, and I can offer that something to Krishna, and that gives me an additional happiness, so now I get two happinesses.
It's just also the mentality of, you know, I'm doing service, but what's in it for me? You know, it's so ingrained.
Sure.
It's like,
fruitive consciousness is a stain. Doesn't want to come out. Anything else? Okay, looks like we're... Oh, no, we're not. Go ahead.
One quick question. Sort of related to the previous question, but I was wondering, if we're engaged in a service, we find ourselves unhappy or unfulfilled because it might not be engaging our like specific propensities or abilities that we're naturally given, and those aren't being exercised in any way. Should I, you know, adapt services, or should I just chant harder, you know, and pray? Just, you know what? How should I address that?
It's a nice question. It is related to the previous question. So, I can think of three or four different... How do you process, how do you address a situation like that? One is, be sure that there are in your, you know, the span of some period of time, a week or whatever you like to look at time, periods of time, and some of the things that you really like to do, that's it's in the jar, it's put in there. It's, you know, I'm getting strength from those things that just are suit my nature and engaging my nature, because if I just do other things and I don't do that, I'm not going to feel satisfied. So I have to make sure some of that's in there. And then these other things that I really, I don't feel it so much suits my nature, and you know, I'll just openly say, there's a number of things that I do that I feel don't suit my nature at all. But there's a reason for doing them. It's not just, you know, I'm a martyr or something. It's at least two things. One thing is, I understand it's important for my spiritual master. He would like to see these things done. And I don't feel I'm qualified to do those things. It's not really my nature to do those things. But he would like to see them done. So it's a sacrifice for him. It's like it's a commitment to the relationship with him that I do those things. And I, you know, I'm mentioning it in this forum that, but I, not, when I'm doing those things, I'm not inside going, I don't really like this. And I don't say to other people, I don't really like this. You want me to do it. It's not, that's sacrifice in the mode of ignorance. It's, you know, it's joyful because it's a loving gesture. Even I don't feel it suits me and I'm not good at it, but. And then another thing is, where's the resistance? If I'm feeling some resistance, it's a reflective mode, which is a mode of goodness mode. What is it inside me that says it doesn't suit me? Is it really, it's just not my nature, or is it really something else is going on? But it's a good question to ask. It's not necessarily even you're going to get a clear answer right away. But it's trying to be honest with yourself and trying to be honest in your relationship with Guru and Krishna, that, or say Prabhupada and Krishna, that this is my situation. I'm opening my heart to you. And please help me understand myself. What is my thing? So it's a, those things that you describe is a good opportunity for introspection. I find it, you know, like, what's inside? What is this? And I kind of answered the next part, but I'll say it again. Some of that is good. Too much of that is not good. Because, you know, where I find myself receiving, I call it, you know, one's voice, where I receive strength, those things are, I should give concentrated attention to and apply myself very diligently and enthusiastically, and then from that reservoir of strength, take some of that strength to some of this area over here that's a little weaker, and be aware of what the weakness is about, and give strength to that which I know is pleasing, although it's an area where I'm not feeling so much strength. So I take some strength from strength and over to this area of weakness and work out a little bit. Not, you know, not obsessive, but, you know, incremental. And that will help me become a more rounded person and more in a mood of service when I'm doing the things that I like, because I'm doing these other things in the mode of service. It's like the mode of service muscle is getting a little workout. Not too much. But enough that I can just, like, strengthen that mode of service muscle. So the things that I like, better my propensity, because largely because of contact with the modes of nature, it suits me. It may be like, you know, going back to this example, the two-pocket program. So much for Krishna, so much for me. And the me pocket's really big. So I want to make the for Krishna pocket stronger, maybe a little bit less over here. But not in some artificial way or extremist way, but you know, in a little way. And then watch and see where the mind goes. Because the mind is going to go to where your attachments are. And if you start, if it starts to be this selfish thought saying, you know, the grumbling thing, I don't like that, or that says something about an impurity. And that's not the thing. It's, you know, I've got this attachment. What's that attachment? Control or the joy or, you know, what is it? Where's that coming from? And so it's helpful. Rather than just like tuck it under the rug and pretend it's not there, look at it, say, where's it? Where is this coming from? And then to whatever degree you can understand where it's coming from, let me move from that, you know, like childish selfishness, to the position of like an adult, where I may do some things that simply because they're to be done. You know, the mode of goodness instead of passion and ignorance. And let me cultivate that. Mindfully, not artificially. And I'll be, as a result, closer to the position of seeing Krishna in even the things that I like and the things I don't like, because of the mode of goodness will help me get to that position. Anyway, the cultivation. So have some thoughts on how to handle those things.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Cardamom Muni.
Yes, Maharaj. As we're talking here, something just came up on my mind that I would probably mention to me about his mom.
Yeah.
Someone that is ill, you know, and I was wondering that I find that devotees, that when someone is in a devotee family, that devotees should be more like come together and assist that devotee by either going, visiting the person, chanting, and, you know, helping the person remain focused on Krishna. Because sometimes when we're in pain, we tend to forget. But if we have devotees around chanting, and
I can put the heater on because your voice is strong.
Yeah. And talking to us, we could remain, it could help us to remain focused. Because I had that experience with one devotee who passed away not too long. And he was in hospital in intensive care. But he wasn't responding. But when you go there and you chant, his body, he was actually making that motion, like he wanted to chant, even though he was brain dead. But it's known that his soul was reacting. You know, that's how I could see it. His soul is reacting to the chant. So what I was saying is that I think it's very important that devotees should understand that when a devotee has a problem, we should be there for them.
Well, I'll add to that, in without naming the names or even the place, but there was a family where they have two children, and their son was diagnosed with some kind of brain tumor or something or other. And it was one of those, oh my God, experiences. So the community immediately took care of all the household duties so they could attend, you know, the cleaning and the cooking and the this-ing and the that-ing, so they could just like focus on their child's health and, you know, the other child and going to school, and they just took care of everything for them. And, you know, the crisis passed, the doctors, whatever happened, and got, you know, came back to normal. But their experience was, wow. Instead of like horrible tribulation, stress on top of stress on top of stress, we could just And they were saying, you just focus on taking care of your son and everything that you need to do and the doctors, and it's all very time consuming, we know, because we went through it, and we're going to take care. If you permit us, we'll take care of everything. We'll wash the clothes and do the laundry and cook and clean and everything. You just look after your son. And, you know, and then something else happened, so it wasn't just like a random, I forget what the something else was. Something else happened. It was like another calamity, like within 6 months later. And the community just stepped forward. They weren't initiated. They weren't like super new, but they were, you know, kind of in that in-between space.
Yeah.
Just like committed to practice. I don't even know if they're chanting 16 rounds at the time. They were just like, you know, service-minded, do what we can kind of family. And another calamity, and you know, with their permission, same thing happened again. They were, you know, I want to be part of this community. We're committed as we take it as Krishna is committed to us and Krishna through Krishna's devotees, and we're committed to Krishna. It's really made a huge impact. And now they're going through yet another one, without detail. It's what Sangha of Vaishnavas do. We have, you know, we have a name for devotee care, but under the heading of devotee care, this is one of the categories of devotee care, that when there's a calamity or some health or some kind of an issue at home, the community, they don't intrude, but they're there to do everything, or whenever the family feels it's necessary. There's many other examples like that. Very important. Anybody that hasn't spoken, that willing to wave their hand in the air, say something. Yes.
I have a question. Just I want to know that.
She's got a soft voice. Go ahead.
If we want to do some service for Krishna or some homework, so and.
Are you speaking on behalf of your children now?
Okay, work at home and. We want to help some help from my family or other people, and if they don't want to do, if they don't want to help, so what we should do?
Are you asking on behalf of your daughter, or are you asking on behalf of yourself, or both?
Asking herself.
Huh?
Herself, what to do in that situation.
What to do in the situation when there's some housework? You said homework. That means just usually homework means at school she gets an assignment and they say, you know, housework. Oh, okay. I have to process it differently now. So if there's some housework to do and you ask for help and it doesn't happen, that's what you want to know? Yes? Well, I'm tempted to say, what do you do? You quietly resent it, or do you speak up about it, or do you smile and just carry on, or what do you do?
Yeah, I don't know at that time what we can do. Yes.
And I'm asking, what do you do?
Could she ask a question? I think she's asking something different to what you think. What's the question you asked
again? What? Here's the question again. You're not clear about the question either, huh? I'm at home. I'm a housewife. I'm at home. And there's a lot going on. And I'm feeling a little overwhelmed with the housework and my duties as a mother and a wife. And I'm thinking, gee, it would be really nice if I could get a little help and I make a little, you know, voice about, can you help, and nothing happens. So what should I do in a situation like that? Is that it?
Yeah, sometimes...
Something like that.
Yes.
Sometimes?
Sometimes I am forcing them.
You're forcing them?
Yeah.
I'm looking to see your face. She's smiling. Yes, Mom, it's sometimes like that. That's the face. Well, mothers know the personalities of their children. And certainly we all know that something that works the opposite is forcing. So I was sharing this with some devotees downstairs before we came up here. Something that I have seen and I believe, maybe you can give it this consideration, not to say it doesn't go on in your house. If children are treated more adult-like, that means explain things to them and not just say do this and don't do that kind of message, like I'm big and you're small, so this is the way, this is the program, got it? But more explaining things, and you know, and similarly then hearing things, and so it's based upon, as you would with an adult, there's a process of communication and dialogue and mutual understanding, and then whatever happens after that, it's the relationship has as a result become stronger. So if in the case of your daughter in particular, let's say, if she says, Mom, I really can't because, then you understand the because. You may not even accept the because, but at least now you know what the because is. And vice versa, if she can understand, if the daughter can understand, this is the feelings of my mom and the reasons why she has these feelings, because I really wasn't aware of all the things that she does, and I guess it would be the right thing for me to do something. But you know, is there some, from the mom's perspective, is there some reason that the something isn't happening? Maybe it's a relational thing, maybe it's a time thing, maybe it's a utility of time thing, maybe it's a so many different things, but you won't find out until you have a dialogue. So you have a little family sit down, or at least, you know, one-to-one sit down, and say, like you're doing right now, in the presence of your daughter, only do it with your daughter. Although she's not yet an adult, if you speak in a way that is respecting, you know, there's a rational processor, a mind, that can, you know, look at things and contemplate things and consider things and take your needs on board along with her needs and evaluate them and say, well, I think that's something that I can do. Or, I really wish I could do, but... And well, then I can help you with the butt part. Maybe I didn't know that you had the butt part, but I, you know, you're struggling with your math course, so you know, maybe Dad can help you with the math or whatever the thing is, so that then, you know, it's a family moving together rather than something else. Now, my sense, of course, it's from a distance. But my sense is your family works very well as a unit. And I would guess, because of your nature and your husband's nature, your children are treated with respect and dignity, and you can have conversations like I just suggested, and there'll be openness to hear. As opposed to some other family dynamic where it's more, I'm big and you're small, so do this, and then there's a pushback. Because, you know, different personalities don't want to hear that. So I would suggest, in your case, in general, and even particularly in your case, more like sharing, as you would with a more adult person than your daughter is, and it'll help your daughter come to the position of adultness, or behaving in a responsible and mature way in relation to your needs and your concerns and even your expectations. She can respond, will help prepare her to meet those kinds of things, not only within the family, but outside, to grow as a young adult, although she's younger than a young adult. By having that kind of a dialogue, recognizing, it's not identical with speaking to an adult, but more in that direction. You follow what I'm saying? Okay, thanks. I don't think I could say it again. There's a group. Advaita Chandra and Krishna Priya organize it. It's a telephonic conference call on the topic of raising children or family. What is it? Parenting. So you may find that kind of discussion helpful. They have different persons speak that have experience. Very soon, it's overdue, a book that devotees from Pune put together by asking different spiritual teachers and leaders to write something on parenting. And when that book is finally released, there may be lots of things in that book that you'll find helpful, that other parents will find helpful in parenting. Because I think that's not maybe the title of it, but that's the subject, parenting. Giving Krishna consciousness to children in the family, where it's wholesome and it ends up good rather than not so good, could have been better kind of results. That would be another resource that will help you, I think.
Inclusive of husband also.
Well, you have a nice discussion with him.
if he wants to help some other people and they don't like in Krishna consciousness, who don't know about Krishna consciousness.
He spends more time in dealing with new people than in the house.
Yeah, new people also, and husband also, children also.
And children also. Leave you with all the housework. Okay. Well, knowing the situation of how your husband was here studying while completing his studies while you were in India with the children, and from that time he was introduced to Krishna consciousness and then you came, and I was wondering how you're going to accept. I remember wondering how is she going to accept this.
I did not understand.
I know your family from way back is what I'm saying. And it's what you're bringing up is a family dynamic. And I also know your husband reasonably well, and I know where his enthusiasm lies, as do you. You more than I, but I have some appreciation where his enthusiasm lies. And as a family, I see the bigger picture is, not the little moments, but the bigger picture is the family is spiritually progressive largely because of that spiritual enthusiasm. Your children have spiritually benefited. You have spiritually benefited. The family has spiritually benefited because of that very strong enthusiasm that he has for what you described he has enthusiasm for. So if there's need, if you're feeling the need for some balance, please temper that feeling of a need for some balance with an appropriate amount of appreciation of how the family has benefited by that very strong enthusiasm for growing in Krishna consciousness and giving Krishna consciousness. The entire family has greatly benefited. Don't forget that, or keep that in the forefront as you have discussions and as you have feelings about this particular point. And I would suggest that probably it's something that but it'd be a very, very good idea to bring up with your mentors. It's just like a family dynamic, and how do we best address this while respecting this a little bit more on this side, please. That would help me as a mother, and it would help in our relationship, and it would help in amplifying my enthusiasm for helping in the outreach activity. Not that I don't like it, but it would help the enthusiasm level. Instead of, I'm less enthusiastic than I could be if there was something more over on this side. Just a relational dynamic. I think your mentors can help you with that. Not like, put some extra points on your side and take a few away from your husband's side. That's not the goal. The goal is to balance the dynamic so that there's enthusiasm and enthusiasm. What do you think of that suggestion? You've been there and tried, then it didn't work?
No. most of the time, I should be wrong. I'm thinking like that.
You should be wrong?
Yeah.
Well, let it, if that, it may or may not be the case. Take some, if you have very caring and, mentors that know you both very well, rather than just carrying this feeling and then them feeling, oh, and then feeling, oh, and then feeling, oh, and then feeling, so rather than just carrying the feeling, just bring it in the association of marriage. Have a nice discussion with your husband and then bring it up. And, I'm sure something more than just the conclusion, well, you're just wrong. So just stop being wrong, will you? So I don't think that's going to be the conclusion. I think there'll be some other conclusion. So that you can be consistently enthusiastic and all of that, nice outcome. And whatever it is the needs are that could be, should be, would be more attended to from your husband's side and your children's side, that there's a family understanding that moves in a good direction, whatever that is. We all make sacrifices. I make sacrifices. I don't have any family and children and job. I make sacrifices. And I life is filled with sacrifices. He makes that, so we're all making sacrifices. So what's needed is that you're feeling the sacrifice I'm making is headed in the right direction. It's appropriate for the circumstance, and then I'm feeling happy as a result. So maybe it is just the right situation, and you need to see it that way. But if you're not seeing it that way, then get clarity. That's why you brought it up. So get clarity from those that you work closely with, your mentors. They'll help you.
Thank you so much,
Manish. Okay. We're going to end. It's 1 o'clock.
Srila Prabhupada Swami Ki.
Yeah.